Top Foundation, and I would like to thank you for attending our lunch today. For one important reason, your money that you paid today goes for the research that we do. Now, I want to introduce the candidates for governor, and as soon as they come up, I'll do that. In the meantime, let me point out one of the research that we have done that's on your table, that you have, that is the 2016 Utah Priorities Project. So this will let you know, and also our candidates that are running for office, how the voters think, what their priorities are. That's an amazing thing. We've been doing this since 2004. When I served in the legislature, before 2004, I would have loved to have been able to sit down and see where the voters are. And, you know, this year, these priorities have changed a lot. And you'll see some of the reaction of the candidates today to that and what they think about that. And I want to thank them for coming and responding to what the priorities. We've asked them some questions. Carrie will ask them a few more questions, and you'll be able to ask them some questions. Let me introduce them, our candidates. Vaughn Cook, who is the Democratic candidate for governor. Gary Herbert, who is our sitting governor, and is an amazing system that we have that the governor has to come every 4 years and respond to the voters how he has done. I think it's just amazing to be in this country. And Jonathan Johnson, a Republican candidate for governor, and Mike Weinholz, who's a Democratic candidate for governor. So I'd like to introduce to you now also, lastly, Steve Cruz, who will give you some more instructions of what to do. But thank you for being here again.
Thank you, Bryson, and thank you everybody for being here. This is something that we are really proud at Utah Foundation to do. I've been with the foundation for 15 years. We started this project 12 years ago, and we have some simple goals for the project. We really want informed voters, informed candidates, and strong dialogue on the issues that matter most to Utahns. And just for a little background, we hired Dan Jones and Associates to do this polling for us. You see a list up here of the top 10 issues. I just want to make one editorial comment on that. Utahns must be feeling better about the economy because it's slipped now to number 5 on the list. And look at healthcare. Healthcare has been number 4 every year we've done this, and now it's number 1 on the list. There's a lot of things going on. There are a lot of new issues on this list. And so let me just mention a couple things about what we're going to do today. And to thank you again for being here, I want to also thank the sponsors of this project and this event. The sponsors of the Utah Priorities Project overall include Zions Bank and Union Pacific, and we're grateful for their major support for the project. For this event, our research sponsor is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints Foundation. And thank you for being a sponsor here. And table sponsors today, we have Equality Utah, Ernst & Young, Fidelity Investments, Love Communications, Overstock.com, Utah Valley University, Salt Lake Community College, and Questar. So thank you to all of you who have helped to make this a success and to help underwrite the cost of this event with your sponsorships. I also want to introduce to you Carrie Bringhurst, who will be our moderator for this event. Carrie is the news director at Utah Public Radio up at Utah State University in Logan, and we have selected her to be the one to ask the hard questions of these candidates and maybe even more difficult to keep them on a timeline to to stay within the time limits that we've assigned them. And so, Carrie, we're grateful to have you here. We will have, in a moment, Sean Tigan, our research director, will come up and present to you some details about the findings of the Utah Priorities Survey and some things about what we're going to do this year in the project. After Sean, Carrie will introduce the candidates more fully and ask them to give their opening statements. And then we'll have a series of questions that are based on the survey results that Carrie will ask them, and they'll take turns answering these questions. This isn't a debate format, but it is dueling speeches. And we want these candidates to tell you why they're the one, why each one of these people is the one that you should elect as governor to try to address these top 10 issues. And so after the series of questions, we're going to open it up to audience questions. And we've got a special number that we'll give you on the screen that you can text your questions to. And then I will sort through those questions and send them to Carrie. So when you see me on my computer down there and Carrie on her phone up here, we're not checking our email. We are getting your questions and sorting through them and deciding which three we're going to ask the candidates. So again, welcome, and thank you all for being here. To Sean.
So thank you very much. I am quite excited to talk to you about the Utah Priorities Project today for 2016. I am going to be taking about 10 minutes to talk about basically five things. I'm going to have you walk away with five main things here. First is the top 10 list, which is over here, and I was hoping we could like unveil it at some point and surprise everybody, but there it is. We also are going to talk about a couple questions in a voter survey about quality of life and whether or not Utah is headed in the right direction. We're then going to talk about, I'm going to show you a couple really very cool slides about ideology and party politics here in the state and across the nation. And then lastly, I'm going to tell you a couple of brief things about some other items in the Priorities Project that are coming up soon. So, as was mentioned, we've been doing this Utah Priorities Project for a while. Our first one was in 2004. We did one in 2008. We had a special election in 2010 and a regular election in 2012. And here we are in 2016. And what we do, the main part of this Priorities Project, is we send out a preliminary survey that says, hey, what are some issues that governors can do something about? We get a whole bunch of responses back, hundreds of responses back, and we take those responses and say, okay, here are 20 or so concerns, and we're going to ask people around the state, over 800 people, to rate those concerns from not concerned to very concerned, and then we take that and we rank them into our top 10 list. And so priority number one, which was a surprise to probably a lot of people and everybody in our office,
except for me,
is healthcare. And healthcare was actually top five list since 2004. And you'll see this really cool graphic back here. It was top five. It was the fifth most important for the last three gubernatorial election cycles. It was fourth most important, and then we pop up to number one. And why is that? So, based upon some of those preliminary open-ended responses and just kind of our own thinking in our office, we determined that it's probably because of a couple things. You know, we've seen a lot of discussion around Medicaid, and particularly there's been some advancement of Medicaid expansion in the state during the legislature. We've also seen healthcare premiums increasing, and people are concerned about that. And I also think that, you know, there's even though we're focusing on the state with these questions and things that are of concern for the state, there's also, I think, people thinking about the presidential election and that we've got candidates that say, you know, we're going to do what we can to hold on to the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, and we've got other candidates that are saying we're going to get rid of it. So there's a lot of discussion around this. Number two is air quality. So this is a bit of a surprise. And in the past, we included air quality generally with the environment. But with this kind of open response survey this year, a lot of people said air quality. I don't care about the environment. I care about air quality. And so we split that up this year, and it bounced all the way up to number two. Education, K-12 education has always been in our top three. And this year, it's number three. You know, the legislature passed 92 bills that are somewhat tangentially, some of them related to education this year. This is something we talk about. This is something that our kids and grandkids are in school, and we've all been to school, or a lot of us have been, and that's probably why this is on the list. State taxes and government spending. The only thing I'm going to say about state taxes and government spending is this is also often on the list, and as these top five issues have almost all been on the list for every year. Interestingly, about this. It's number four for Utahns overall, but for those of us who are full-time employees, state taxes and government spending is number one, which I think is interesting. You know, we get our paycheck and we see some taxes taken out, and that maybe makes us think about this a little bit more than the population overall. And then we've got jobs in the economy. So jobs in the economy was number two in 2004. We had some economic woes in 2004. In 2008, we were all out buying houses and cars we couldn't afford, and everything was great, and it didn't even show up on the list in 2008. Then in 2010 and 2012, we were thinking about those cars and those homes we couldn't afford, and jobs in the economy were number one on the list. But you know, we've got some low unemployment in the state. We have a slow, continual movement out of the Great Recession across the nation, and as you can see here, it's not on the top of the list. And it'd be interesting to see what happens over the next 4 years, and to see if see what happens to that issue at that point. So, rounding out the top 10, we've got water supply and quality. We've got crime, which sometimes shows up, sometimes doesn't. Partisan politics is not often on our top 10 list. It is this time. Homelessness and poverty. Poverty's been on the list before, but a lot of people talked about homelessness. We decided to kind of group these together, and that made the list. And then the environment. And the only thing I'm going to say about this slide is that, interestingly, so I talked about air quality, number two. We've got water supply and quality. A lot of people talking about water supply. A lot of people talking about water quality, maybe more nationally, as number six. And then the environment is number 10. So we've got three issues on this list that are kind of environmentally related. And I think that just goes to show that Utahns are pretty concerned with and thoughtful about their natural surroundings and their natural environment. So, as I mentioned, we had a couple questions that were not really related to that top 10 list. But quality of life compared with 5 years ago. So on this item, during that kind of the post-recession doldrums, you see that people weren't feeling very good in 2010 and 2012, that post-recession period, about quality of life. But we've jumped back up. And if you see here, more than a third of us say, you know, we're better off than we were 5 years ago. There are some of us that still say we're not better off, you know. We've got 21% of us say, you know, we're worse off than we were 5 years ago. Those were the people not buying those houses they couldn't afford during the Great Recession, probably. So interestingly, kind of tied with this, we have a question about whether Utah is headed in the right direction or is on the wrong track. And so this one, I am going to argue that there's a slight trend toward wrong track on this figure here. We've only got five data points. I'm going to argue there's a slight trend, but even and we didn't improve even as we improved with the quality of life from the next slide. We didn't improve for this election cycle. But even if it's slightly trending toward being on the wrong track, most of us say that we're headed in the right direction. There's only, you know, just over a third of us that say that we as a state are on the wrong track. So, ideology. I'm going to tell a quick couple things about ideology. We used a Pew survey that is really, really weird questions, but they've been around for 22 years, and we decided to use the same questions, and we come up with this figure. And I don't want you to pay too much attention to it. I want you to go and read this report, but pay most attention to the Blue Mountain and the Yellow Mountain and the Red Mountain. And something that's happened over the past 20 years is that the Blue Mountain and the Red Mountains have separated out a little bit. And you know, that goes to show that we've got a little bit more of a partisan divide. But notice kind of how that blue, yellow, and red mountains are separated apart. And now this is national. This is national data from a 10,000 person sample. In Utah, we've got something that is kind of interesting, I think. Actually, it's very interesting. The red one is a very similar to the Democrats are about as conservative. That's what that red thing shows there. We're about as conservative as we are across the nation. However, the yellow, those are unaffiliated, that median line is to the right or more conservative than unaffiliated voters across the nation. And lastly, the Democrats. The Democrats in the state are very liberal. We are consistently liberal and much, much more liberal than Democrats across the nation. Take a look at this. Spend a little more time on this. I think it's very interesting. And just quickly coming up, we've got a gubernatorial report coming up in 2 weeks. We're going to hear from some of our gubernatorial candidates in that report. We've got a delegates report coming up in 2 weeks after that. We've got some questions like Utah would do a better job than the federal government at managing Utah's public land. And then we're going to show how the delegates and the voters are different or the same on some of those hot button issues. And then we've also got some priorities forums coming up at a lot of our institutions of higher ed across the state. We've got some of those next month and then throughout the year. And then we've got a bunch of priorities briefs on each of these top 10. We're going to go into depth with a lot of follow-up data that we're not releasing in this report is going to go into those briefs. So we've got a lot of great information there. So we've got the top 10 list. Healthcare is number one. Air quality, surprisingly, in my opinion, is number two. And jobs has dropped from number one. That's one of the takeaways. Another takeaway, quality of life, better than 5 years ago? Yes. That is a takeaway. I think it's a resounding yes that quality of life is better. Right direction, you know, it bumped up a little bit, but it's trending, I would say, to be a lower amount number of us who say that we're heading in the right direction. And then lastly, ideology. Pay attention, look in the report. The Democrats are super, super liberal. They're super Democrats here. Our unaffiliated group is spread out, and we talk a little bit about that in this report. And our Republicans look like Republicans elsewhere. That's it. Thank you.
Have you ever seen anyone so excited about data and stats? It's great. Some good information, and we're going to carry on with that information in our questions now with our gubernatorial candidates, and we hope you find this information helpful. First of all, I want to introduce our candidates, and then I will present the speaking order. We took a very scientific method of having them select and determine how they would be speaking. We chose a little chip out of a bag. So that was our scientific effort in that regard. Let me begin with Mr. Cook, a quick introduction of Mr. Cook. He is a native of Cache Valley. Go Aggies. And has chaired the Utah County Democratic Party. He has developed a personal health software program and is founder of and CEO of Zyto Incorporated. And seated next to him is Governor Gary Herbert. He became Utah's 17th governor in August of 2009. Prior to that time, he served as Utah's lieutenant governor. He's had a career in real estate and was also involved in other business ventures, and we'll be hearing from him. Actually, he will be our first presenter in just a couple of minutes. And then seated next to him, another Republican candidate, Jonathan Johnson, who joined Overstock.com as general counsel. That was in 2002. And he's been, was their acting CEO. That was in 2013. Right now, he's serving as chairman of the board. And before joining Overstock.com, he worked at two international law firms, and that's Jonathan Johnson. And Mike Weinholz, a Democratic candidate for the governor, grew up in Buffalo, New York. He joined the medical staffing firm CHG Healthcare Services in 1998. He's been recognized by Utah Business Magazine as CEO of the Year. And there are your four candidates we'll be hearing from today. Let's begin now again. We made a selection as to who would speak first. These candidates have 4 minutes. They'll present information, their opinions, and their perspectives on what has been presented by the Utah Foundation today. And we'll begin that 4-minute introduction with Governor Gary Herbert.
Well, it's great to be with you all, and thanks to the Utah Foundation for your bringing this together, Steve and your team, and thanks for all of you for being here today. It's only fitting that I go number one because Utah is number one in about everything that we're doing. So thanks to your efforts out there. We will have a number of issues to talk about. Some of that will be in the question and answer period, I expect. But let me just touch on a few. Air quality. I know that's a big issue for many people. It's not just a health concern. It certainly is the number one issue for health. particularly here on the Wasatch Front, but it's also an economic development issue. I signed a bill this past legislative session here just in the last 2 days that's going to reduce the NOx of water heaters in our homes, and when it's fully implemented, will reduce NOx pollution more than what we have in our entire refinery industry out there. So some significant steps in the right direction. In spite of 400,000 new people here on the Wasatch Front, we've reduced our pollution levels by 35%. So we're moving in the right direction and doing some good things there. We have more to do. As most of you know, the challenge right now is automobiles. And 50% of the pollution that comes out of our tailpipes is part of the contribution to our gunky air days. And so that's why a year and a half ago I called for Tier 3 fuels. I've met with all of our refineries to see if we can encourage them to get that done. Tesoro, one of our refineries, has agreed to do that, and I think others will follow. We have a responsibility ourselves to make sure that we, in fact, recognize that we are part of the problem. It's not Kennecott, it's not just the refineries, it's not just big business. Education is one that is a top issue. Again, if we're going to have long-term sustained economic development, we have to have a skilled labor force. We are the best area in America for business today, and part of that is because we have a great productive, skilled, and bilingual labor force. Our efforts between what we've done and the business community lobbying for this and the response of our legislators is that we've made education our number one budget priority. We've put about $1.8 billion of new money into education. We understand in Utah that we want to be in control of our education system. We want to make sure we have state and local control of not only the standards, the curriculum, the textbook acquisition, and the testing. I've had a year and a half ago with the Attorney General to review that to make sure that was the case, that we have not somehow ceded responsibility to the federal government. And he's come back and said, give us a clean bill of health, saying we are in control of our education from top to bottom. We're making our young people, helping our young people become career and college ready. And the most important aspect of what we want to have is outcomes. And our teachers are doing a great job. The latest NAEP scores show that in Utah, on eighth grade math, we are now 11th. We are 10th in reading language arts, and we're 7th in science, going to 6th. Our minority scores are up. Our graduation rates are up to 9%. Our ACT test score is one of the top in the nation today on ACT. So the outcomes we see are great. Taxes and spending. Again, I know that's a big issue for all of you, particularly as business people and households. What is our expendable income, and how much have we got to keep? And the good news for us all is I see the foundation report that we have now the lowest burden of taxes. Utah's tax burden is the lowest it's been in 20 years. That corresponds with the National Tax Foundation that says our corporate tax rate is the fourth lowest in the nation. And it says our corporate, our business, state business tax climate is the ninth lowest in the state or in the nation. So again, it shows, you know, why we are having a business atmosphere that's recognized by Forbes magazine and many others as the best in the nation. An important point on this, too, is that we have efficiency in state government. We've not just rested on our laurels and say, this is good enough. We've been recognized as the best managed state in America. We have said we can do better. We have a goal of 25% more efficiency by the end of this year. And we're going to meet that goal. We've embraced technology. If we'd have kept pace with inflation, we'd have 2,200 more state employees than we have today. We have fewer state employees. You have to go back to the year 2001. We are saving every year $177 million for the taxpayers. So, again, we're doing great. We'll answer some of your questions during the Q&A period. Thank you for being here.
And now we will hear from Mike Weinholz, a Democratic contender for Utah's governor.
Thank you. So yes, my name is Mike Weinholz, and I'd like to use this time to introduce myself to you. We'll have time later to answer questions about the foundation report. So yes, I am running to be your next governor in this great state of Utah. But I'm also running against the one-party system that we have in our state that seems to be more interested in serving the needs of special interest groups than in serving the needs of everyday Utahns. And this has caused everyday Utahns to feel disconnected from their government. My wife and I moved here nearly 20 years ago for a business opportunity, but it didn't take long for us to fall in love with Utah. because it's just such a great state with great people, and we wanted to make it our permanent home. And I've spent most of the last 2 decades dedicated to making Utah a better place for all of us to live through community service and philanthropy. I've also done this by building CHG Healthcare Services, a company I co-founded 19 years ago that has adopted this same commitment to community service. And in fact, I'm more proud of the difference that CHG makes in the world than I am of its financial success. Just this month, CHG was named for the 7th year in a row by Fortune magazine as one of the best companies to work for in America. This year we are number 18. And Fortune also has subcategories in this recognition. We're also named a best place to work for women and a best place to work for millennials. Now, how does CHG get this continuous national recognition? It's because we put people first. We live a core value called putting people first. And that's exactly what I intend to do as governor of Utah. Because when I talk to Utahns of all political persuasions, whether they're Republicans or Democrats or independent, they express a frustration with our state's current political system. They're frustrated that decisions are being made by smaller and smaller groups of power brokers behind closed doors with little transparency, little accountability, and little regard for the wishes of the people. So I want you to know that as governor, this will not be the case anymore. We need to give the people of Utah a voice again. There's 3 things that you should know about me that are certain. First, I'm not a politician. That means I will never, ever make decisions for political purposes. I'm not interested in politics. I'm only interested in problem solving and doing what's best for the people of Utah. Second, I have no interest in political power. I'm only running to answer a call to serve that I have felt very deeply for quite a long time now. And third, the only ideology that I subscribe to is putting people first. And I intend to do that with the great people of Utah the same way that I've done it for the last 30 years in my business. You know, there are lots of people who are saying that the American dream is dead. Well, I passionately disagree with that. In fact, I've been blessed to be a walking example of the American dream. I learned my work ethic from my father, who worked in the Chevrolet auto factories in Buffalo, New York for 43 years. I worked in those same factories until I was almost 30 years old. And then I decided I wanted to do something different. So I went to night school, got a business degree, and then I started as an entrepreneur. But the one thing I never forgot and never will forget is my blue-collar roots and my blue-collar values. So I've been blessed to be successful in business, but I still think of myself every day as a blue-collar kid from the Rust Belt who worked really hard to succeed. So I'm excited about the future for Utah, and I'm excited about the opportunity to give back to the people who have meant so much to my family and me. And so as I enter this race, I look forward to the challenge of running for governor, and I look forward to learning something new from every Utahn that I talk to along the way. My goal will be to show all Utahns that to me, your voice does matter, and that our best days are still ahead of us. Thank you very much.
And Mr. Cook, you selected the button that said number 3.
Carrie assured me that 3 was the lucky number. It means I'll win the election. My name is Vaughn Cook. I am a native of Cache Valley, born in Logan, raised most of my life, my formative years in Hiram, which is a small town about 6 miles south of Logan. I graduated from Utah State University. Skyview High School is my high school. And in fact, Dan Baumas asked me for some more specifics about me for a bio, and I told him, well, I went to high school with Jackie Levitt, who is Mike's wife. I don't know if you know her, but a lot of you may. You didn't know Jackie was that old, but she is. I am a fifth generation Utahn. My great-great-grandparents were contemporaries of Brigham Young, and I have told people that if elected, I'll be the most fun governor the state's had since Brigham Young. So, Gary's not that much fun, is he? Yeah, he's a party guy. My wife and I, Catherine, have been married for 44 years. We have 5 children, 15 grandchildren. Some of those children, in fact, I guess the majority of them live in the state. Some live out of state. We are concerned about the same things you're concerned about. I have a granddaughter who has a weakness in her lungs, and every year when we get the inversion, she seems to lose more days at school than she should be. So the air quality issue strikes close to home in our family in the same way it does in yours. We are blessed to be the recipients of the heritage that we all enjoy in this state. You know, there's a saying that we all stand on the shoulders of giants. And I believe that's true. We stand on the shoulders of those who have gone before us. One of my hobbies is road biking, and if any of you have road biked, you ride a bike that has a very thin tire. The reason you do that is because it cuts down the friction on the road. But I've often been on my bike and thought about the people who have built the roads. I couldn't do that road biking unless someone had the forethought to put a road in and asphalt it. And if somebody didn't have the forethought and the wisdom to keep that road in good shape, so the things that happen around us are the things that bless our lives. We stand on the shoulders of giants all around us. In government, we stand on the shoulders of the giants who have preceded us. And Utah has a reputation of good governance, for which I am grateful. We don't look back at those who have gone before us to criticize, but we can look back and say, are there things that we did in the past, decisions we made in the moment that made sense then, that really don't make sense now? And we build on the past. We make incremental progress, and that's why Utah has the reputation it does, is because as Utahns, that's the attitude that we have. As governor, I am interested in building on the incremental improvement. There are things we can do in this state that are better. I think that the way we have treated education over the last 20 years it's embarrassing. That's not to say we don't have great teachers, but I don't think we appreciate those teachers. I don't think we respect them and give them the respect that's due. I think the fact that we have the lowest spending in the nation per student is not something to beat our chest about. Now, that doesn't mean that we can just pour more money into education and make things better. We have to have accountability, and we're making good progress. It's those kinds of things that I'm committed to as governor, and I appreciate you being here, and I appreciate the chance to talk, and Carrie's intimidating me, so I have to sit down.
I don't mean to be so intimidating, but you know, we don't want any havoc up here. We gotta stick with the clock. And that way we can have more opportunity to have you share your questions and then have them comment on some of the issues you'd like them to address. We'll turn the time over now to Mr. Jonathan Johnson.
Thank you, Carrie, and I want to thank the Utah Foundation. Steve and Bryson, Dan and Sean, you've done great work, and I am proud to be associated with the Utah Foundation, serving on its board of trustees. I think that the work that the Utah Foundation helps Utah do it better. We do things better because of groups like the Utah Foundation that help us determine what priorities should be and what things we should work on. Now, when Sean walked through all of these statistics and charts and graphs, the first thought that came to my mind was a quote by Mark Twain on the three types of lies that there are. There are lies, there are damn lies, and there are statistics. And there's a lot of ways to read statistics. And we can look at it and we can say, Are we about the same? Is Utah doing better? We can say we're doing better, or we can say that there's a growing number of people that think that Utah is headed in the wrong direction. I happen to think Utah is headed in a good direction, but I think that Utah can do it better. And why is it that a growing number of people think that we're on the wrong track? That percent over the last 4 years has grown by 17%. Why is that? Well, I go back to a quote that Ronald Reagan made when he had been president for about a year. He went to speak to the Indiana State Legislature, and he said, "The federal government operates under the arrogant and outdated assumption that states cannot manage their own affairs." Now, boy, if that was true in 1982, it feels like it's more true or worse today. We have continual federal overreach into our lives. And on top of that, we have too much of the states, including Utah, looking to the federal government for solutions and for funding. And every time that funding comes, it comes with strings attached. An example, last year, Congress passed a law called the Every Student Succeeds Act. What a great sounding name and a noble goal attached to a horrible bill. A horrible bill that gives the Secretary of the Department of Education full veto power over our state's education plan. And yet the National Governors Association and our governor were lobbying Congress to pass that law. That's not right. We can do better in educating our children. I'm eager to answer questions about all of the 10 priorities up there, but I think education is important. And I think the way we do education better is we localize it and we personalize it. Today, our state school board, which is charged under the Utah Constitution with providing general oversight of public education, has picked one curriculum that all 600,000 students must study in Utah. That's not local control. That's dictating from the state. And just as I don't think we ought to be dictated to from Washington, I don't think the rest of the state ought to be dictated to from Salt Lake. So we can do it better. How do we do it better? First, we do it with leadership. And I think, and obviously I think this, I think fresh sets of eyes and fresh minds on problems are a good thing. When people have been in politics for a long time, I think they get partisan. I think they get too comfortable with those that are in power, and they forget the people. I love it that the fact that three of us up here aren't politicians, and we're businessmen, and we're eager to represent the people. Now, I'd like to close with a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King. He said this, courage asks the question, help me out, Courtney, I've blocked. Cowardice asks the question, what is safe? What is safe? Expediency asks the question, what is popular? And help me out, I'm
am I making you nervous?
You're making me nervous. But conscience asks the question, what is right? I'm not going to do what's popular, what's expedient, or what's safe. I'm going to do what's right. And that's address these priorities, even if they're hard to address.
Thank you. I wish my four boys got as intimidated by me as you do. All right, this is the opportunity where we are going to hear some responses to questions that I had following a review of the survey by the Utah Foundation. Now, we, of course, can't address all of the different issues, but you will have an opportunity as members of the audience and participants today to share some questions and thoughts that you might have that you might want us to address. We will be taking your text questions following my questions, and the number to text your questions is 801-810-8421. And again, Steve will be looking through those questions, and then we'll have an opportunity to share some of those and have the candidates respond. While you're doing that and thinking of your questions, I'll ask some questions of my own, and we will just have you stay in your seats to respond. Again, you'll need to push the button on your microphone, and it should turn a green light indicating that you're heard. So don't say anything up here once you turn on that green light that you don't want the audience to hear. We're going to start with Mr. Cook, and then we'll go to Governor Herbert, and then Mr. Johnson, and then we will continue on with Mike and Mr. Weinholz, and then we'll rotate the answers and the opportunities to respond. So first of all, I did want to address the number one concern that was outlined from this survey, and that again is Medicaid health care issues. If you are a Utah Project junkie like me, you've noticed that over the years that concerns about job stability and the economy, as was mentioned by Sean, are still in the top 10, but they're less of a concern than is health care, which now we know is the top issue for 2016. In the most recent session of the Utah State Legislature, lawmakers passed a limited Medicaid expansion plan. Where do each of you stand when it comes to what level the state should work with the federal government to give Utahns access to health care? And we will start with Mr. Cook, and you have a minute and 30 seconds to respond.
Thank you. When we see the survey and the priority of health care, it brings two questions to mind. One is it access to health care, is it quality of health care, or is it the affordability of health care? I talked to some of my employees and friends, and the cost of health care premiums have gone up so much that it's almost prohibitive. And for companies who provide health care, like my company, it's a cost, but it really is more of a cost because our employees have to come in and participate and add some of that money to the pool. However, more and more of us are being covered with health care because the economy is good and we feel more prosperous. I think it's times like these when we should turn our attention to people who are less fortunate than we are. People in the state who may be underemployed, people who may not have access to health insurance, and even if they did, they couldn't afford it because their premium would eat up their entire paycheck. I think that we should stop bickering about Obamacare and being embarrassed to think that we're going to take advantage of it. I think we should take advantage of it. I think we should spend our energy working on improving it, not on repealing it. So I am in favor of expanding Medicaid to help cover the poorest of the poor in our state, to take advantage of the full benefit that we can receive from the Affordable Care Act.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm going to have just a rotten reputation. I live by the clock. That's what happens when you
okay,
do radio.
Okay, you're good.
So we'll give Governor Herbert an opportunity to respond as well.
How much time do we have?
You have a minute, 30 seconds, and the question again was, where do you, each of you stand when it comes to what level the state should work with the federal government to give Utahns access to health care?
Well, thank you. Health care certainly has become the water cooler topic of the day. Everybody is talking about it, and the challenge is, what do we do about it? When Jonathan was speaking, I was thinking of the phrase, let's not let perfect be the enemy of good. Sometimes you take what you can get in the political arena where you get the votes that will pass, and it may not be perfect, but it may be as better than doing nothing. That's what we've tried to do here in Utah. We actually sued on the Affordable Care Act. Why? Because our belief was to the federal government, and I've talked with Speaker Ryan and Mitch McConnell about this very issue, don't take the money from us. We don't need your program. Let us keep the money at home and develop our own program. As we challenged that and went to the Supreme Court, we found out two things. One, the taxes are mandatory and the expansion is voluntary. So whether you do or don't, you have to pay the money. I developed a system called Healthy Utah, which I thought was better than traditional Medicaid, because not only did it help provide the health care, but it helped people get off government assistance because it had a work requirement as part of it. The reason people come to government is because they're not making enough money. The Affordable Care Act, although well-intended, did nothing to reduce the costs of health care. as Vaughn has said, that wouldn't it be nice if we actually reduced the cost of health care, and that would make it more accessible to the masses out there? I'm proud that here in Utah, we have the lowest cost health care with the highest quality available in America today. We're doing something right. We have a fewer percentage of people that don't have access to health care. So our process with this past legislative session, maybe it's incremental, but we'll be able to look at the data, build upon that, and hopefully expand to more people as we're able to afford it.
Thank you, Governor. Mr. Johnson?
The perfect should not be the enemy of the good, but neither should we be dictated to by the federal government. When we look at this report, there are three reasons that people give that they're concerned about health care, and they make it number one. One is Medicaid expansion. One is Obamacare, and one is access. Medicaid expansion, as it was proposed last year, was relying on federal dollars at the way and expanding it the way that the federal government wanted us to expand it. We should be working to expand it on our own terms. Next year, under Obamacare, there's a section called 1332, which lets states dictate how they want to use Medicaid dollars. We should be spending our time figuring out how we get our dollars back without taking uncapped, unknown liabilities on our own taxpayers.
You have 30 seconds remaining.
I'm going to cede it to Mike.
All right. And Mr. Weinholz, would you like to begin your comments?
Yes. So as someone who has spent 30 years working in healthcare, I have a unique insight into that industry. And with regard to the bill that got passed, I'm going to side with the Salt Lake Tribune editorial that said that this bill that got passed is an insult to all Utahns. What happened was the legislature decided to cover the least amount of Utahns at the most expensive price. So not only was this morally bankrupt, but it was fiscally irresponsible. If we would have had full Medicaid expansion, we would have over $500 million a year from the federal government coming back into the state of Utah. These are taxes that Utahns have already paid, and we're not getting them back. This is a great example of putting politics before people, which is something that I will never do. Governor Herbert had the opportunity to unilaterally accept full Medicaid expansion about 3.5 years ago. He decided to punt it to the legislature, who has been dawdling with it ever since. And the other thing that I resent is, you know, when the Affordable Care Act was started to be debated 4 years ago, the Republicans put this false narrative out there about death panels, which we know were not true at all. Well, I would tell you that this bill that got passed is a death panel because the legislature decided that we're going to cover you 16,000 people, but you 90,000 people who have just the same amount of need, you're going to have to continue to suffer and even die. And there are reports conducted by Harvard and published in Healthy Affairs that show that 100 Utahns die a year because of lack of affordable health care coverage, and we need to expand Medicaid fully. That's what Utah values are. We take care of our people.
You do owe Jonathan that 30 seconds. Thank you. Thank you so much for addressing what obviously is a very important topic of conversation here in the state of Utah. I wish we had time to discuss it further, but this will lead into furthering conversations on all levels following this meeting today. And in regards to education, for a number of years, Utah Foundation has used a measure of the state's commitment to public education. They call it the funding effort. And it compares the dollars spent on public schools for each $1,000 of personal income to the state. Now, this measure has trended downward. We've seen that downward trend since the 1990s. And right now, we're 31st in the nation for that funding effort for our state government toward education. Candidates, is it important, in your opinion, to reverse this trend? And we'll begin with Governor Herbert.
We have reversed the trend. We went from, when I came into office, of cutting education to now building and have paid, as I've mentioned, in new money into education, about $1.8 billion of new money. two-thirds of our state budget goes to education, so it's certainly the number one priority for me and for our legislature to make sure we fund appropriately our education system. There's three ways to do it. You can reprioritize and take out of the bucket of money that comes from the taxpayers and say, well, we're going to put more money here and less money there. That's some of what we've done. The second one is to raise taxes. We've seen that tried in Illinois, for example, when they raised taxes during the Great Recession, and they lost immediately 100,000 jobs. That's the Democrat approach. Raising taxes really can kill the economic growth, which is a third way, and that is, in fact, grow the economy. If we grow the economy, we have the rising tide that raises all boats in the harbor and have additional money to pay the bills that we the people think are necessary. It should not be an increasing burden on individuals, households, and businesses. We don't want to kill the goose that's laying the golden eggs. And so our approach is proven to be very productive. We see the results. Are we where we need to be? No, but we're on the right road, going in the right direction. Our process here, our policy, is working significantly well. That's why we have the support of really all the stakeholders and the business community when it comes to our administration and the legislature in funding education.
Thank you, Governor. And Mr. Johnson?
Last year, our state auditor, John Frugal-Dougal, did an audit of our education spending in the state. And one of the things that he found, well, he found two things that I think are important. One is, we don't know where all of our education dollars go. Now, that's no way to run a business, and it's no way to run a state. Second, we don't know, we can't prove that when we spend more money on math, our math scores get better. Why is that? I think it's because we've got too decentralized an education system. We don't have enough money going to classrooms. We have too much staying in bureaucracy. It's time to strip out levels of bureaucracy, put more decision-making in the hands of local school districts, more importantly, principals, and more importantly, teachers, so that they have say over how that money is spent and how it's used. Our teachers do yeoman's work educating our children and our grandchildren. More of the money that we spend needs to get to them. When that has happened, then I think it's a right time to discuss, do we need to be spending even more money than we are now? But until we do that, it's like trying to fill a bucket full of holes by pouring more water into it. You need to plug the holes first to see if you have enough water in the bucket.
And Mr. Reinholz.
So part of what got us here has been tax cuts over the last decade. 10 years ago, we went from a tax rate of about 7.25% to a flat tax for corporations and individuals of 5%. During the same time, we decreased property taxes by about 40%. The other thing that happens is we allow the education fund to be raided, the K-12 education fund to be raided by other interests, whether it's charter schools or higher ed, and even transportation in some cases. So these three things alone, the raiding of the education fund, the drastic lowering of property tax, and the institution of the flat tax took $1 billion a year, a billion with a B. So imagine what we could do with an additional $1 billion a year for our education funding. I agree with the governor. It's a good step to increase the funding that we did this year, but it's not enough. And by the way, it's not consistent with Utah values. Surveys show over and over again that Utahns value education. We have to educate our children. They're the whole future for us. And they're also the future of economic development. We can't have strong economic development unless we have an educated workforce. And we're starting to fall behind.
Thank you. And we'll conclude comments on this topic with Mr. Cook.
I think one of the serious problems we have in this state is teacher drain. We have teachers who are getting trained in the state and then they leave the state because they can get paid substantially more in other areas. I think the other problem is we have people who look at teaching as a profession and they are discouraged because it's easy to take another job that pays more money. I think we need to respect and show respect for our teachers more than we do. And that's where it starts, because the thing that makes the most difference in a child's education is an inspiring teacher. We want our teachers in the classroom with the energy and the motivation to be inspiring. I remember my own public education experience, and I had several teachers who were catalysts in my life to create curiosity and a desire to learn. I think that teacher pay and teacher salary is an important part of how we need to expand education. About 70% of us in the state feel that it would be all right for me to pay more taxes if I knew those taxes were actually going to go to education. So I don't think we can rule out the possibility of a tax increase, but I agree that that's the last thing we want to do. We want to look at how we're spending our money. Are there ways that we can generate the money to pay our teachers more, to show them the respect that they deserve, to help them become more inspiring to our students? I think that's the first step. That's that first next incremental step in education.
Thank you. Thank you again for commenting and sharing your thoughts about education here in the state of Utah. I do have one more question, but before I go to that question, just reminding you that you can text your questions to Steve at 801-810-8421, and I think we'll take a couple of those questions after this final question from me. And this does have to do with another important issue that was brought up during the survey, and that is air quality. And the difference between the overall question of are we concerned about the environment, air quality, stood out as being the second issue that was of most importance during 2016. So my question to you, and we'll begin with you, Mr. Johnson, is should the governor and other state officials take the lead in addressing a public matter that is often regulated by the federal government? And if elected, how would you address air quality issues?
So absolutely, we need a governor that takes the lead on this, and not someone who dallies on the issue, nibbles around the edges, and proposes draconian regulations. I've been concerned about air quality for a long time. 7 years ago, I was the founding chairman of the Salt Lake Chamber's Clean Air Task Force. Chaired that group for a long time. We've known about low emission water heaters for a long time. We've known about tier three fuels for a long time. Tier three fuels can take away roughly 35% of the pollution if we went from tier two to tier three, like we went from decades ago from leaded to unleaded. We need to be aggressive on this. And we can't back down because the refineries say no. We need someone who will do the right thing, even if it's unpopular, and even if it's not politic. We need a governor who will take the lead on cleaning the air quality along the Wasatch Front, in Cache Valley, and in the Uinta Basin.
Thank you. And Mr. Weinholz?
Well, I agree with Jonathan that we first have to get serious about this problem, and I haven't seen any evidence of that. We have only been nibbling around the edges on this issue, and every time the issue comes up, it comes with the qualifier, well, we need to clean up our air, but we can't do it at the expense of business and jobs. Well, you can do both. You just have to have the political will to do both. We have the air quality today in Utah that Mexico City had 20 years ago. It's among the worst in the world. And Mexico City had the political will to take the steps necessary to clean up their air. And we can do that. We can do that as well. But we have to get serious about it first and realize that. And I'm really grateful to the Utah Foundation for bringing it to the attention and putting it on the radar, because this has been viewed as a back burner issue. People say things like, well, we can't do anything about the inversion, we just have to live with it. And I don't think that's true. I think that we can clean up our air without harming harming our businesses. Look, I'm a business guy. I don't want to do anything to harm business, but we have to get serious about this. And the other thing is, you know, we're very proud of the fact that, you know, we're ranked number one for business in the country, but, you know, what has that gotten us? The main criteria for being ranked number one for business is low taxes, low regulation, and low wages. Well, low taxes leaves us with underfunding our education system. Low